All right, we're back. VS 2010 launch in Las Vegas. And we would like you to tweet your questions to @CH9Live, twitter.com, @CH9Live. We have a very special guest here today, a longtime C9 friend and incredible developer, Stephen Tube.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Charles.
So as many people know who have been following Channel 9 over the years, you're like, you know, sort of leading the way with programmability in the parallel world or in the concurrent world. Parallelism is what we call it. So last time I talked to you on Channel 9 Live was at PDC.
Yep, back in October, November, back in whatever that was.
When was PDC? It was 09. I remember that part.
Yes, exactly.
What have you been working on lately? And more importantly, what have you shipped today?
Right, so since whatever the PDC was, October, November, we've been really trying to make Visual Studio 2010, .NET 4, Visual C++, like, as best as it can be. So finding and fixing the last few bugs that we could scrounge up and really making it a terrific technology. Mm-hmm. So Visual Studio 2010, .NET 4, Visual C++ 10, the whole kit and caboodle, it's really we've really focused our efforts on making it significantly easier for developers to express and take advantage of parallelism in their applications. And that's sort of, in a nutshell, that's what we've been working on for the last several years.
Sure.
It's about making it easier for developers to leverage the multi-core and many-core hardware that's becoming the norm these days. Mm-hmm. It's about making it requiring significantly less code and boilerplate and just generally reducing the amount of code a developer has to write to take advantage of this parallelization support. Mm-hmm. And it's about great tooling for allowing developers to find opportunities in their code for parallelization, to find problems once they've parallelized where they could do things better. Maybe they're only getting a small speed up and they can get a larger one. Mm-hmm. And it's about finding bugs in their code because, as we all know, parallelization is difficult.
It's hard.
And even with the new support we've added, it's still difficult to get it 100% right all the time. So you have a debugger, and we've augmented the debugger with really cool tools for finding flaws in your parallel applications.
Excellent. Now, speaking of tools, I mean, the profiler that you guys have written is amazing. I mean, you can actually, you know, get your app, get your source code, run it, and for the first time ever, really have an understanding what your code trying to do.
Absolutely. You really get
it's a beautiful tool.
Yeah, you get insight into what a Windows application looks like while it's running. You see this nice timeline view with, actually there's several views, but mm-hmm. One of the views is this threads view where you get this nice timeline that shows on the x-axis time and on the y-axis threads. Mm-hmm. And you basically see this swim lane for each of the threads. And at any point in time, what was that thread doing? If it was running, you see this green section. Mm-hmm. If it was blocked, you see red. If it was paging, maybe you see blue. If it was doing I/O, you see a different shade of blue, or purple.
Sure.
I forget the actual color mappings we use, but there's a legend.
Yeah.
You can really drill into at the millisecond level or finer. Mm-hmm. What was your application doing? If it was spending a lot of time blocked, why was it blocked?
Yes.
What was it blocked on? If it started running after it was blocked, what happened that allowed it to wake up?
Mm-hmm.
We have some nice examples either on our blog or on some case studies that have been published that actually demonstrate walking through how the profiler was able to help find significant issues with applications, sometimes that you didn't even know about. Maybe your startup time looked like it was fine, it was taking 3 or 4 seconds, but when you run under the profiler, you see that a second of that was because of some I/O operation that you could have overlapped with other I/O operations.
Sure.
You can just shave off a second, and maybe you didn't even know about it until you actually looked with the profiler.
Excellent. So I just want to remind people, @CH9Live, tweet your questions in. We also have people in the audience. You're more than welcome to ask questions. Just raise your hand. I'll call you. But if you want to know where we're going with parallelism, because today we're also going to talk about what he's working on and just kind of the big topic of parallelism. This is very interesting. It's a super hard problem. Burton and everybody else on your team are working hard. Hairs are getting grayer.
Yeah.
I don't see much gray in yours, though.
Yeah, luckily.
But... So, of course, the theme sort of today, at least in the interviews I've been doing, it's been native code and managed code.
Yep.
Now, your team has built tools for both class of developers.
Yep.
Now, one could argue that the native guys and girls, they're the ones who actually spend a lot of time, like, twiddling threads, if you will, and playing around with that kind of low-level way, where in the .NET world, that's not always the case for your average enterprise developer. So what I'm trying to say is you have Concert for native code,
mm-hmm.
and you have TPL, P-Link, and other things like that for the managed people.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me a little bit about the native world, specifically with Concert.
Yep.
Where is it being used? Does Visual Studio use it?
Yep. Uh-huh. So we've got the concurrency runtime, which we kindly referred to as Concert.
Concert.
We like these musical acronyms.
In Concert.
Yeah, there you go. So Concert is really this this runtime layer that affords efficient execution of parallel applications.
Yeah.
So you have upper-level APIs or higher-level APIs that decompose the application to very fine-grained units of work, which Concert is then able to go and execute. Mm. And Concert is really two levels. One level of it is a scheduling system. Think of it as a really powerful thread pool that's able to take these little units of work and efficiently run them on the box, taking into account the topology of the machine, leveraging new functionality in Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 user mode scheduling, taking advantage of things like cooperative blocking to ensure that if something blocks, you're still able to utilize the hardware in the system. And then this scheduling infrastructure, which is sort of very lightweight, then sits on top of a resource manager, which is able to coordinate between multiple schedulers existing in the same process. Mm. And this is important for compositional reasons. If you have multiple libraries that you're using in your application, one of them, maybe it's using Intel's OpenMP. Maybe one of them is using the Parallel Patterns library or Parallel Pattern library in Visual Studio 2010. Mm. One of them may be using some other third-party library. If all of them are built in terms of Concert, even if each of them instantiates its own scheduler, you don't want each of them thinking that it owns the box. If you're on a 16-core system, you don't want each of those thinking that it owns all 16 cores and just completely oversubscribes the box. So through the resource manager, the schedulers that are used by each of these components can cooperate. Mm-hmm. And the resource manager hands out cores, in effect, to allow, for this point in time, OpenMP gets 8 cores. And then when it stops needing them, maybe it gives 4 back and it delivers those 4 over to these components over here. And allows you to get the most out of your box.
So now, of course, the entity down the lowest levels of the system that's managing the sort of process scheduling, of course, is happening in the kernel,
yep.
where you're not happening. So
right.
My question would be, the kernel might decide, no, I'm not going to give you 8 cores or 16 cores because mm-hmm. I have to do some other things as well. So how do you interact with the scheduler? What's that relationship like?
So for Visual Studio 2010, it's actually fairly disjoint. In that we, every process still basically assumes that it's responsible for the box. Now you can override this through process affinity and things like
sure.
that, but for the most part, that's the state of affairs. Within the process, we're able to do this negotiation. Between process, we would really require some sort of cross-process resource management capabilities from the operating system.
All right, enough of my dumb questions. So let's go. We got AL3891. So are there any thoughts in the TPL team on GPU.
Yeah, topic of the day. So general purpose GPU,
yes.
For those that aren't aware, it's basically taking advantage of video cards and very, very fast processing for certain kinds of operations mm-hmm. That video cards provide for doing general purpose computing. With Windows 7, Windows Server 2008 R2 and so forth, we've got this thing called Direct Compute, which helps to do general purpose GPU.
Mm-hmm.
You have things like CUDA from NVIDIA, you have OpenCL. Mm-hmm. There are all these frameworks, and it's definitely something that we're investigating for the future. For right now, with Visual Studio 2010, TPL, and the managed support doesn't provide any capabilities with regards to a GPU.
Okay.
There are some sponsors at the conference here this week, actually, that do have solutions that plug into Visual Studio, or they're for native. So Parallel Insight, for example,
cool.
Allows some integrated debugging and profiling capabilities and development environment for GPU. And there are other third-party solutions, and it's definitely something we're looking at.
Good. All right, Blob-O-Matic. Does the VS 2010 IDE itself use parallelization for compilation of managed code? So he's talking about the compilers for managed code.
So MS Build does take advantage of parallelization.
Mm-hmm.
MS Build has it on several levels. For the most part, MS Build actually does per-process isolation. So it actually spins up multiple processes rather than doing parallelization within a single process.
Okay.
However, there are some areas where it does take advantage of, for example, the managed support for parallelization. So for example, there are checks in MS Build to determine whether it needs to update something or not. And those checks are parallelized using Parallel4, Parallel4Each, and
wow.
so forth. And generalizing the question, there are a plethora of places within Visual Studio itself that do take advantage of parallelization, both native and managed.
Sure.
So back to the native, for example, if you do find in files in Visual Studio, where especially if you have a very large solution with thousands and thousands of files and millions of lines of code, when you search for various things,
sure,
it can take a while.
Yes.
And that's now parallelized, taking advantage of the concurrency runtime. And one of the APIs, one of the libraries built on top of the concurrency runtime called Asynchronous Agents, which allows you to basically have these data flow networks where you can basically have pipelines and send messages through the pipeline, and that pipeline processes with as much concurrency as it can muster. And that's all integrated into this find and file solution. Another example is in Visual C++ in the IDE when you use IntelliSense.
Yeah.
In certain paths, you're actually taking advantage of Concert to do things like sorting.
Nice.
Using the parallel pattern library, which provides the ability to do parallel regions, parallel loops, and so forth in native code. On the managed side, there are a variety of places where the managed support is taken advantage of within the IDE and in the frameworks. So in one of the really cool features in the IDE in Visual C, Visual C Sharp and Visual Basic is if you click on a symbol, the IDE will highlight all the places in the source file where that symbol is being utilized to very quickly see where this variable is occurring.
Yeah.
That's taking advantage of parallelization under the covers.
Nice.
Especially if you have big files, it can be important.
There
are lots of places throughout the frameworks where a lot of the new data structures that have been introduced, like concurrent dictionary, concurrent queue, are being taken advantage of. So if you have ASP.NET WPF under the covers where it's doing a lot of its XAML work, it has these caches that it's building up. Those are taking advantage of concurrent dictionary.
Nice.
And you know, not to advocate reverse engineering, since you can't do that, but if you would happen to use a tool like .NET Reflector, you can go search for this stuff and find all the places.
I'm sure you could. I mean, Visual Studio itself is mainly managed code these days,
yep,
right?
Absolutely.
So, LuMM, C++. MS focuses on cloud computing. Why not focus cross-platform libraries that handle such features?
So I can't speak very well to the cloud computing aspect of cross-platform libraries, but I can speak to cross-platform with regards to parallelization.
Yes.
And if you look at the work that Microsoft has done for native code, we've had a really great partnership with Intel, where Intel has the Intel Threading Building Blocks, which is their library-based solution for parallelization. And if you look at the latest releases of it, these APIs from the Parallel Pattern Library show up there as well. So we've enabled cross-platform through Intel, one of our great partners, and having the same API show up in both places. So if you do want to move cross-platform from Visual Studio 2010 and you want to, for example, take advantage of parallelization but then also run on Linux, you can use Parallel Pattern Library and then use Intel's compiler and Threading Building Blocks with the same APIs to run on a different platform.
Nice.
Of course, we want you to stay on Windows, but
well,
the capability exists.
But no, I mean, that's excellent. And to kind of push the question even further out into the, wherever, the ether. In terms of the parallelization problem isn't just a client problem, right? It's also a problem on the server.
Yep.
Now, it's easier, in general, to be solved on the server as we experience computation today. ASP.NET is highly parallelized. It's stateless. So my question to you is, what work is going on to take advantage of, millions of cores that could be nodes in an integrated mesh in the cloud? That could be send your computation to the cloud, point it to some data, and then continue doing what you need to do on another thread, then you get the results back, if we are going to be purely connected world.
Absolutely, and I think that's the direction we'll see things headed.
Okay.
The parallelization support in .NET Framework 4, Visual Studio 2010, and so forth, you can eventually see that being taken advantage of, certainly in the cloud with Azure. And if you think of Azure as a giant cluster, you could imagine farming work out to thousands or millions of cores in such a solution. And that's definitely an area we're heavily investigating for the future.
Cool.
If you look at some of the work that's been done in MSR, for example, with Dryad Link.
Yes.
The Dryad Link is something you can go download today, and it basically enables link queries, like linked objects or parallel link, which does parallelization within a process, to be farmed out across an HPC server cluster. You could imagine similar support being provided on top of Azure, not just taking advantage of your own on-premise cluster or private cloud, but also a public cloud solution.
Excellent. So back down to earth. We have scalable query. You've tackled vertical scaling very well in the parallel libraries. How about horizontal scaling?
So I think I was starting to allude to this with the previous answer. Horizontal scaling with regards to sort of scale out across a cluster.
Yes.
And so we're looking at a variety of programming models and APIs that would take the work that we've done in Visual Studio 2010 and expand it out to cluster and cloud. Nothing concrete at this time, but if you want, you can take a look at something like DriveLink to get a sense for where these things might head.
Absolutely. And we have another question. What do the parallel programming debug tools look like in Visual Studio 2010? We talked a little bit about the profiler, but what else is going on?
Yeah, so this is the very cool stuff, and I should mention that this isn't just tools built into Visual Studio, but also tools provided by partners.
Okay.
But within the work in Visual Studio 2010, you have two new debug windows. You've got the parallel tasks window and the parallel stacks window. Parallel stacks basically provides the same information that you would find in your threads window, but kind of concatenated across all threads. So you're not just looking at one thread at a time, one call stack at a time. You get a nice graphical view, in effect, a cactus stack showing all of the threads in a single graphical view that's not just an image, but is also interactive. So you can get a sense of what at a moment in time is happening across your entire application. And you can do this not only for threads, but also tasks. We mentioned briefly the task parallel library for managed and the parallel pattern library for native. Mm-hmm. They both provide a first-class task concept, and that task concept has been elevated into a first-class citizen in the debugger. So the parallel stacks window allows you to view either a task-centric view or a thread-centric view. And then the parallel tasks window also takes advantage of this task as a first-class debugger citizen and provides a similar experience as you get with the threads window, where you can see all the threads in your application, you can see all the tasks, but not just the tasks that are running. You can see all the tasks that are running for sure, but you can also see all the tasks that have been scheduled that haven't started running yet, and when they will run, what will they run? You can see all the tasks that are blocked. Why are they blocked? Are they waiting on another task? Are they deadlocked? If so, we'll try and show that as well. What does the cycle look like? Mm-hmm. So very rich integrated support. And we talked about the profiler. The profiler can also be used for debugging. In a sense, you're debugging performance issues. And then there's some really cool tools. For example, NEMA Labs is another company that's here at the conference. They're highlighting their work with a sort of, I won't call it debugging, but a sort of interactive compile your code, add parallelization, see where things may have gone wrong, fix it, try again, and enables the sort of interactive cycle that allows you to very quickly parallelize your application.
Excellent. I mean, that's actually a really good point about developers understanding when to parallelize, what to parallelize, what makes sense. We've talked about that before many times. So what do we have here? Boy, Al, man, you won't let up with the GPU questions. We're going to have to do an interview at C9 about this sometime. So let's go down. Can you introduce, well, can you talk a little bit about how TPL relates to RX?
Sure. So RX being the reactive extensions.
Yes.
Eric Meyer, Wes Dyer, all the guys working on it.
We've done an interview with you and Wes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So reactive extensions is basically a link model for targeting data that's being pushed rather than data that's being pulled. So with enumerables, you're basically running link queries over data that's being pulled out of some existing data source. With RX, you're basically asynchronously pushing data through observables, and you're running queries over those streams.
Yes.
And in fact, if you look at the reactive extensions download on the DevLab site on MSDN, you'll find that there's actually that it's using TPL in the .NET 4 version, and in the .NET 3.5 version that's available, there's actually a backport of TPL and PLink and so forth, and the system.threading.dll, which again, reactive uses. So they're really meant to be used together.
Awesome.
Reactive is all about kind of coordinating these streams of asynchronous execution, and TPL is all about taking the most advantage of the box when scheduling asynchronous and computationally bound work. So they actually play together fairly nicely.
Yes, they do.
If you look at, in fact, it's sort of bidirectional. If you look at some of the extension methods that the reactive team added for tasks, there's a task.toObservable method. So it's not just kind of launching tasks to process data asynchronously. It's also about taking those tasks, converting them to observables, and then consuming tasks as a sequence of data.
Excellent. So we got a lot of good questions. This is great. When would I choose the pure thread API and corresponding locking mechanisms over the parallel framework extensions and the TPL?
Yep. So I'll take that as two separate questions. One, the sort of the thread, system.threading.thread, and the other, the synchronization primitives.
Okay.
So in general, wherever possible, we would advocate just use tasks, unless you find a very specific need where you really need to control things like Windows-level Windows level control over threads, so thread priorities, thread stack size, things that in general we don't want you touching anyway. But if you did need those sorts of controls, typically you would migrate towards threads. But for everything else, you would migrate towards tasks. The task API provides a very rich set of APIs for working with your asynchronous operations. And in fact, there's even support with tasks for basically wrapping a single thread with a task. You can say, I want this task to be long running. And in effect, we dedicate a thread to that task such that that pretty much obviates any need you would have for generating a custom thread other than doing this very fine-grained control over the thread's properties itself. So in general, go for tasks unless you really, really find a need to go to threads. Okay. With synchronization primitives, there's some synchronization that's obviated by going to tasks. For example, if you want to wait for multiple asynchronous operations to complete, previously you would need to, for example, create a manual reset event, maybe keep a counter that you atomically decrement with interlock.decrement, only signaling that synchronization primitive when it reached zero and having something else block on it. With tasks, you can just say task.waitAll. Or you could say task.continueWhenAll, and you get a callback when all these asynchronous operations are completed. And that callback is itself a task, so you can do additional work with it.
Awesome.
But there are still times when you do need to drop down to lower level synchronization. Mm-hmm. And actually, for that purpose, we've supplied additional synchronization primitives in .NET 4 that wrap the common synchronization patterns that you might find in an application. For example, if you were still using the thread pool or using the APM pattern and you did want to keep track of the remaining asynchronous operations, you don't want to have to do this create your manual reset event, decrement atomically this pointer and this counter and so forth. Instead, we provided a countdown event. We just signal, and when it reaches the right count, anyone waiting on it wakes up. So we've released several of these primitives for this sort of thing. Concurrent collections, where rather than having your data separate from the synchronization that controls access to that data, so you have a queue and a lock around the queue, you can just have a concurrent queue.
Awesome.
Or a concurrent dictionary, or a concurrent stack or bag. We have a blocking collection class where if you have a producer-consumer scenario, rather than having to explicitly manage the semaphores that control throttling against this set of items being added to this collection, you can just create a blocking collection and it handles all that synchronization for you. In general, we've really tried to raise the level of abstraction. And all of this goes not just for the managed side of things, but also for the native side of things. You'll find in the native, in the CRT, we've got a concurrent queue, a concurrent vector. We've got a new type called combinable, which allows you to do basically very efficient reductions. So if you've got a bunch of threads running in parallel, you want to, for example, sum up the results of doing some operation across all this data. You don't necessarily want to have to synchronize on every single computation. So instead, you just say combinable, and you say combinable.local, and you just continually update the local one. And when you're done with your computation, you say basically combine, and you get the result, rather than having to explicitly manage the synchronization. And the concurrency runtime itself provides these synchronization primitives that are concert aware, and that when you block on one, in effect, it signals the concert that something's blocking and allows concert to schedule additional work in order to make up for the fact that you've got this lost time on a thread.
So in some sense, and we talked about this before I get to more excellent questions, is really what you're trying to do is abstract away threads from programmers, period. I mean,
right.
You shouldn't think in terms of threads, thread infinity, thread sync, all that stuff. Just think about what you're trying to do, bundle it up in a task, and roll on.
Exactly.
So that's actually, I mean, it's a beautiful model. I'm not going to, maybe I'll ask Guthrie about that. Are there any special constructs in F# that are targeting the parallel framework?
Absolutely. There are a few, actually. So F# has this really cool construct called asynchronous workflows, which allows you to write, in effect, asynchronous code that looks serial, that looks sequential. And when you write one of these asynchronous workflows, you might want to interact with tasks in a variety of ways. For example, you might want to actually run this asynchronous workflow as a task. So workflows provide this start as task method, which runs the workflow and gives you back a TPL task to represent that asynchronous operation. Additionally, you may have tasks that you want to use within the asynchronous workflow, and you don't want to block within this asynchronous code waiting on a task. So it provides this bidirectional support, which allows you to basically wait on a task asynchronously inside one of these async workflows. So that's sort of integration between tasks and async workflows. Mm-hmm. There's this other support, again, built into the F# core libraries. So there's modules for working on arrays in parallel that target TPL under the covers. And then in the power pack for F#, there's a parallel implementation of the sequence operators that targets parallel link. So
nice.
Instead of the SEQ operator, you have the PSEQ.
Okay.
And you have this parallel implementation.
Awesome.
Let's see. We have, is it possible to take advantage of parallelism when reading files?
Absolutely. And there are a variety of ways you might go about doing this. One is to take advantage of asynchronous I.O. And something like the async workflow support that I just mentioned in F# is very good for this sort of thing. As is the fact that tasks provide the ability to create tasks that represent asynchronous operations. For example, there's this from async method that allows you to wrap something like filestream.beginRead, filestream.beginEnd, or endRead, and so forth. You can also just take advantage of parallel loops when reading files. Typically, you wouldn't want to do this in a server environment where you really care about keeping the number of threads to a minimum. But in a client environment where you've just got one user and you don't care about using a few extra threads, if you're reading a bunch of files, you can use a parallel for loop and just read from them synchronously. You'll block some extra threads in the process, but you can very, very quickly parallelize your code to take advantage of however much throughput your disk will allow. And that typically does end up being the limiting factor. If not the number of cores you have, on a dual-core machine, you'll likely see 4 or 8x increases in throughput by taking advantage of parallelization, because at that point, you're limited by your disk speed.
Excellent. So, you know, we have 1 minute left, and I just wanted to, let's see if we have anything here. Are parallel list queues really faster than manually created? This is Radio Man.
So I'll take that to mean when manually created versus what he means by that is queues or lists that are wrapped in a lock.
Yes.
In many cases, yes. In some cases, no. They are engineered and they're optimized for certain scenarios, and in those scenarios you can actually see significant performance throughputs. And I'll give an example. The concurrent queue data structure that we have is just a public surfacing of the same concurrent queue data structure that's used in the thread pool. So the thread pool in .NET 3.5 used a list with a lock around it. And now in .NET 4, it uses a lock-free queue implementation.
Excellent.
And if you just queue up on a dual-core machine, just queue up, say, 10 million delegates, and switch between .NET 3.5 and .NET 4, taking advantage of the multi-targeting support in Visual Studio, you'll see probably a 2 or 3x performance throughput increase, largely just because of that change from the lock around the list to the concurrent queue implementation.
Okay, so thank you so much. In 10 seconds, can you tell me what's the biggest problem on your mind today?
Correctness.
10 seconds. Huh?
Correctness.
Correctness. Correctness. Hey, thank you guys for treating your questions. Sorry we didn't get to all of them. We got to most of them. Al, we'll probably do a GPGPU interview for you someday.